We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Diamonds in the rough or cubic zirconia? Mike Gianella from Baseball Prospectus helps us look at some of the breakout players that are drafted after post 200, like 200th pick in ADP. Coming up next on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Mike Gianella from Baseball Prospectus. Mike, welcome to our annual talk.
Hey, yeah, it's great to be here. It's funny. I listen to you or a RotoWire podcast like maybe twice a week on my runs, and I listen to 1.5 speed. So I was like, why is the song so slow? And I'm like, oh, okay, it's live, and it's at normal speed.
That's right. I do the same when I'm walking the dog in the mornings. I'll listen to... You know, there are so many great podcasts right now that I probably listen to like 1/100th of the good content that's out there, in part because just there's a bandwidth issue. And in part, I kind of feel like I don't want to steal other people's stuff. So sometimes I don't listen just so I can come up with my own takes.
Yeah. So I don't listen to you and Scott until after I write my fab column. And partially it's because I don't want the same thing. I don't want to seem like I'm stealing from you. Sometimes I come up with the same stuff organically, which, you know, happens. We've both been doing this a long time, but yeah, I don't want it to be like, oh, like this sounds way too much like what Jeff and Scott were talking about, which it almost can't be helped.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we all look at the same stats to start off with there in the same player pool. So it's easy. It's tough to be original sometimes, but it's also a good problem. It just means we're a growing industry, a maturing industry. And you and I have been doing this for a really long time. How long ago did you get started with BP?
I've been with BP now 10 years, believe it or not. So before that, if you remember, I had like my own blog for a few years. Yep. So I've probably been doing this for about 15 years total, but I've been with BP for 10 years.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Love BP. You know, from the inception, I'm still really good friends with Joe Sheehan, with a lot of the good folks there. Christina Carl is obviously a huge impact. Even when they don't do fantasy specific content, it's always impactful for what they've done for how I've approached fantasy and just in consuming baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jay Jaffe was there, like, as I was, he was kind of leaving as I was coming in. I mean, he's great. I mean, and then some of the younger people now, like Robert Orr, you know, Mike Yeheto, there's just so many people come in and out of there, and it's just a great, like, place to kind of cut your teeth, or, you know, some people just do it part-time, but just so much good analysis, for sure.
Yep, exactly. Let's talk about some of the news items before we get into our factor flukish type of discussion. I don't want to steal from baseball. Speaking of stealing, from Baseball HQ's title, I'm always on the panel, First Pitch Arizona for factor fluke. So diamonds in the rough or cubic zirconia. Guys, can we count on them after the breakouts? But before we do that, a couple of top items. Chris Bryant, unfortunately, went on the IL today with a heel bruise, retroactive to yesterday. He battled plantar fasciitis in this same foot last year. Obviously it was a huge problem for him.
Yeah. You know, and I hate the injury prone label, but it just always has been something with him, like, especially the last 2 or 3 years. And it's the thing too, where when he's on the field, it seems to impact his production. He's never really been the hitter that he was, like for those 1 or 2 years with the Cubs where he was, I won't say elite, but like close to elite.
Right. And you know, it's just, he's the power. Where's the power been since going to Coors Field? Really weird how that's just disappeared.
True. Although the funny thing I remember about him is that he never was like a big exit velocity guy. So he wasn't a bad one. Like, he's not Nicky Lopez, but he also never was like at the top of the pops where he was like just hitting the ball really hard. It always seemed like more, he was a smart hitter, like good approach, like a gap hitter, certainly had over the fence power, but I think it's, I'm more surprised at the average. Like, I really thought going to Coors was going to make him into like an elite average hitter, and it didn't really do that either.
No, it sure didn't. And, you know, that's where it usually helps you a lot. But, and last year he did hit for average despite the lack of power. In fact, you look at his numbers, you're like, oh, he slugged 475. That's not so bad. It's just the home run category that you're like, oh. And then the fact that he didn't hit one at all at Coors is a little concerning. But, we'll see. I mean, the Rockies, they're getting Charlie Blackmon back on their from his bereavement leave. The Rockies, I always have a hard time figuring out what they're doing anyhow. They signed Bryant, but then traded away Arenado. There just wasn't that next step. Like, I can't figure what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, Nolan Jones, he's not the greatest player in the world, but I thought he'd be up earlier. I was just kind of a little surprised that they just sent him down for 2 months. And yeah, at a different organization, it wouldn't matter. You'd look at him and go, oh, well, I see why he's blocked. But in Colorado, especially after Crone went on the IL, I thought, well, right away you'd see him. And I mean, he's up now, but yeah, it's a team I don't really like having too much investment in for that reason, unless it's a proven veteran, because that seems to be who they like. Where I don't like investing in Rockies because it's like, I just don't trust them.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm kind of that same point. And it's fun to poke fun of them, but same time, we still have to use them as part of our player pool. And still, I want to get them right. And that's really, I'm always just a little off on some of these guys that are coming back. I didn't see Brenton Doyle.
Well, let's say too, it's a great fan base too. So like, it's fun to poke fun at the team, but like, they've got so many loyal fans. It's a great place to see a game. Like, I just kind of feel for the fans there.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you see their attendance numbers are always good. I mean, the Coors Field is beautiful. Unfortunately, I only got to kind of like peek in from the outside. So the only time I've been to Coors Field was around it. And it was during the COVID lockdown in 2020. We did there was one point where the numbers were down, right? So we did a road trip. We did like Zion. We did Denver. We walked around Coors Field. We peeked in through the gates, and that's all. We couldn't see any baseball, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've never been inside either. Like, I've been to Denver many years ago, but it was not during the baseball season, so I've never been in there either. But it looks beautiful from the outside, for sure.
It does. It does indeed. Giancarlo Stanton coming off the IL, probably going to be limited to DH duty. He was out for 7 weeks with this strained left hamstring, which unfortunately is something we've seen before with him, that he's had these long absences due to muscle injuries. Big weekend against the Dodgers coming in, and he's from there. He really wanted to get back in time for this series. Didn't have much of a rehab assignment.
Yeah, so I saw him. I was there Tuesday for the little rehab that he had. I was in Somerset, New Jersey, which is the Yankees AA, and I saw him and Josh Donaldson and Tommy Conley. And that doesn't tell you much. Like, those guys, especially Donaldson, you could see in his body language, he just didn't want to be there. I'm not singling out Donaldson. I think a lot of players are like, yeah, I just want to stay healthy. I'm getting my reps in. You know, I'm not here to go 4-for-4 or whatever. But yeah, Stan's back, and he's certainly useful when he's healthy. Like, we know he can go on a big streak. I think for the audience here that you have, Jeff, like, you know, NFBC, like 15 team mix with no drops, he's just kind of tough sometimes, because I imagine a lot of people hung on to him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, how long is he gonna be healthy? Like, when is he gonna get hurt again? I'm not saying he will, but if I had to place a bet on it, I'd say there's a chance.
Yep. I'd say you wouldn't even be able to get plus money for him not going on, or I should say, you wouldn't be able to get plus money saying he'll go on the DL again. It's likely he'll be on the IL again at some point in time. So we'll see. Such pure power. When he gets on a roll, you really want that, capture that there too. It's the tricky part. And he qualifies at outfield this year. Won't play there, but he qualifies.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, the other thing too, you're right. When he connects, like, I don't know if there's a player, or maybe there's like one or two other players, that's as exciting when he actually connects with the ball. And you're like, I can't believe what I just watched. You know, ball goes out like 115, 116 miles an hour for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. All right. One other injury note, and this one, we're still waiting to see if there's a transaction that's going to happen to Justin Steele, who is going to be on our list as a guy, as a breakout guy. Instead, we're going to talk about as an injury guy now. He left yesterday's start with after three innings with a forearm issue. He's going to get an MRI today on that one there. Such a nice start to the season. Really hate seeing this.
Yeah, the weird thing about it, like I was watching the game and I was on Twitter, like a lot of Cubs fans noted he was shaking his arm like in the third inning, but it almost seemed to be more of a, oh, like I'm just uncomfortable, or and I don't think he called for the trainer. But then, yeah, like afterward, you know, they took him out, you know, he didn't come back. And, you know, it just sort of makes you wonder. I'm not blaming the Cubs. It just sort of makes you wonder if something was wrong, you know, before that.
Yeah. Yeah, and he wasn't very good in his previous start against the Reds. He was actually pretty good yesterday before getting hurt, though, against the Rays. You know, I think he had three no-hit innings before he left the game. So, yeah, kind of a real bummer there because he was a breakout guy. We'll use that as kind of our bridge to real or something to kind of sell high on here. Justin Steele and his breakout, were you buying on this? Was this a new level for him, or was this a hot streak?
I mean, it was probably a bit of both. First of all, I think Steele was better than like we thought he was coming into the season. Like he's a good pitcher. He's capable. He's very good at tearing ground balls. However, this level, and this is often what happens to these pitchers the first third of the season, I don't think this was necessarily sustainable. I don't say he's getting lucky, but there's definitely some like batted ball luck at play where he wasn't going to continue pitching at this level. And I think you pointed out like one of his last starts, and there was one before that, before the three no-hit innings, you'd kind of seen some slippage a little bit. And the thing with Steele is he lives and dies by the ground ball. And that's kind of what happened in those two games. And I'm kind of scrambling to see which two they were now. It was the Reds. And then it was, you know, at Houston, which is certainly a tough opponent. As you've pointed out, not as tough as, you know, they seem to be sometimes based on where they're ranked. But right. Yeah, in those two games, like he, you know, didn't keep the ball on the ground, and I don't think he really has strong enough stuff to survive that. You know, unlike some pitchers where it's a pop out or, you know, even a deep fly ball.
Exactly. So, unfortunately, can't trade him now. We'll wait and see the results of the MRI. You're going to need to see him pitch a few times before we make any other actions involving him. So that's unfortunate. We're going to hit up the diamonds or cubic zirconia discussion in a second here. But first, quick note from our Blue Wire sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Thank you for your indulgence there. For those of you listening live, it's only a couple seconds. For those of you on podcasts, we appreciate you listening to the ads. Blue Wire hosts all of our podcasts, the RotoWire podcasts. We really do appreciate them there. Let's talk about some of these guys that are post 200 picks that are really busting out. Starting off, you've already seen questions in the comments about him. It's Josh Jung. Main event ADP was 214. He's done so far is hit 295 with 12 homers, 37 RBI, snuck in a stolen base, and 40 runs. I mean, I think that's a part of the aspect of Jung that we didn't expect were the runs and, of course, the high average. What's your take on Josh Jung?
Well, I like him a lot. So he was already a good hitter who made some, like, real, like, sustainable changes last year in the minors to improve his approach, ability to drive the ball. The question was, and perhaps is, with him health, and that was the thing. He never really had a full season, and there were questions about his durability, like could he keep it up, and was the health contributing to him not performing as well? You know, as you pointed out, and this is in my notes, like the lineup team context helps him a lot. On a weaker team, middle of the road or worse team, he wouldn't have those runs. I do think the power slips. He's not going to hit like 40 home runs, but if you drafted him where he went, 25 home runs and 260 average, that's a pretty realistic expectation at this point for Jung.
Absolutely. A couple of things in mind, too, that I like about him. K percentage last year was 38.2. Now, again, that was in just 26 games, 100 plate appearances. It's down to 28.3 this year. Gotta love that. The spike in the contact percentage, the exit velocity, the hard hit rate, all the barrels, all those are, really positive mentions if you look at his StatCast metrics. So you love seeing that as well. So that indicates to me that at least, he's hitting the ball really hard. The question is, will he continue to hit fly balls at a 41% rate? Will he hit line drive? He's hit a lot fewer line drive, a lot fewer ground balls, I should say, about the same amount of line drives, a little less, but he's really getting some elevation on that ball. Will that continue? And will he continue to hit for that sort of that hard hit rate?
I think the hard hit rate will be close. The home runs are tougher just because you're right. Like he shouldn't be hitting this many home runs. The one thing I'll say from having seen him, and it's not like I watch him every day, but when I've watched him play, it doesn't strike me like an Alex Bregman or Nolan Arenado situation where he's specifically selling out for power to like one part of the park. Like it just looks more organic. Like it just looks like he's found his power. And as a result, again, that's why I don't think, he's on pace for like 35 or 34 home runs or whatever it is. That's not going to keep up, but he should hit like another like 13 to 15. And again, where you drafted him, if you got him outside of the 200, and I think you brought this up because I got him in an auction league. It was a 15 team mix for like $3. Like I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah. I had a debate with a co-owner and a score sheet team we manage. And it was Jung. I prevailed, and we kept Jung over Alec Bohm. Bohm went, for a couple of weeks, it was looking pretty close. Now Bohm's hurt; he went on the IL today, so that's something with his hamstring injury. We'll have to watch there a little bit. But yeah, let's suffice to say, I'm pretty happy with my choice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember who was, it was the end game. So I remember who was left, but and Brett Sayre, president of Baseball Prospectus, was the co-manager there. At that point, he was driving the actual auction piece, but I was kind of feeding him like who I didn't want, so it was a co-decision, probably 70% Brett. But I'm not unhappy with the choice.
Yeah, Brett is, by the way, a fantastic dynasty player. I'm in a score sheet league with Brett, and unfortunately we're in the same division, so like I won 100 games last year and I was 10 games out. I mean, it's like, come on.
I was in an honor league with him once, and I he's part of the reason I left. He didn't do well the first year, but he built that team for year two. And he just, because of his knowledge of dynasty, he just won it going away.
Yeah. So make sure to give Brett a follow on Twitter. Good player. Good player. He's also in Tout Wars in the mixed auction league as well. Which Tout League are you in this year? You used to be NL, but I know you're drafting like you were online this year, last couple.
Yeah,
years,
so right? I'm in the mixed draft currently, and actually, I'm the defending champion in both that and Labor NL. This year, I'm third in Tout Mixed, although it's a distant third from Seth Trackman, who is at the moment like wiping the floor with all of us. And in Labor NL, I'm bouncing between first and second with Doug Dennis of Baseball HQ. And Glenn Colton and Rick Wolf are right on our heels. That's a much more interesting race than Tout Mix. But those are my two, you know, industry affiliations.
Yeah. And actually, I misspoke. You also were in AL Tout. In fact, during the pandemic, we did a couple, one of the online auctions. You pioneered the strategy that Doug Dennis perfected last year, completely punting starting pitching, just loading up on the hitting categories, doing well in the ratios and saves. You know, you did well with it. I think you finished third the year that you did it. And then Doug won it going away last year.
Yeah, I finished fourth and it was like a 60 game season. So like, who knows like what would have happened. I think the pitching was fine. The offense is where I might not have gotten to the promised land. I will say that that's actually an old school, like Alex Patton strategy from the early 80s, like back when, you know, in the American Dreams League, Peter Kreutzer, you know, is one of the members of the Tout Board, is in that league too. That's an old school 4x4 strategy, like before the ratings requirements. And, you know, Alex figured out that you can pretty much just spend everything or almost everything on offense, you know, get one reliever on the cheap and then just get eight other $1 relievers. And, you know, one or two of them just wind up like, you know, stumbling into saves and you win that, you win ERA, you know, you win whip, and then you cruise on offense. It's easier in 4x4, obviously. I know you're in an old school 4x4 league. I've heard you mention a few times. It's doable in 5x5, but the point you've made is the margin for error is pretty thin.
Yeah. And the thing is, we have no innings requirement there. And I think we've discussed that a couple times on this pod and how that's controversial for some people. I still think you got to get everything right to make it work out. Doug did get everything right last year, or almost everything right. You know, he got Aaron Judge at a $30 discount, first of all. That tends to help. And then, you know, a couple other of those bats he also did. So the fact is, even though other people spent close to the same amount of money on hitting as he did, he won the hitting categories going away, which was pretty impressive. But at any rate, I thought, though, when you're giving up two categories, not one, wins and strikeouts, it's really tough to pull off.
Yeah, and the other way you need everything to go right, too, is you need the teams behind you to all kind of be very good but not excellent. And that's the problem, I think, even more than nailing the strategy, which is if you do that strategy to perfection, you know, and you finish with, 98 points, somebody could still finish with 100, 103 or whatever, and you come a close second. And I think when I analyzed it, it's almost a coin flip as to whether that will happen or not. So, yeah, it's an interesting strategy. I think it's a good strategy to ensure you're competitive. As far as winning, maybe not so much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's a margin for her, but you know what? It's 1 out of 12 anyhow. That's your chances of winning a league in the first place. So yeah, right. I feel like, all right, you give yourself a chance to be competitive and maybe you'll win. So I kind of like it that way. Some chatter in the room about Spencer Steer. Hit the go ahead homer last night, batting fourth a lot. He's not at the same level as Young in terms of his production for the season, but he's hitting .289 with 8 homers, 28 RBI, and 30 runs. He was part of the prospect hall last year for the Reds. They got that in the Tyler Mahle trade and Christian Encarnacion Strand in that same trade. Steer, I mean, he's kind of a little fly in the ointment in that the Reds were kind of like, okay, we'll give him the job now. He's ready now, but our big names are coming up later. He's at a point now where like, okay, we have to find a way to keep him in the lineup and get all of our other big time prospects.
Yeah. And I think you're at the point now, like you're right. Like he's not like great or you know, certainly isn't somebody who should keep like, you know, Strand Encarnacion or anyone else down, but he's earned his spot. And I have to think even, you know, when Joey Votto comes back, and you probably know more about that potential timetable than I do, he's got to play somewhere. Like, I almost feel more what's going to happen is somebody in the outfield is going to wind up taking a seat or at DH, and they're just going to keep Steer in there. Like, they have to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Maybe put Steer in the outfield because he's got a better arm than India. Jonathan India is kind of another fly in the ointment because he's not a great defensive second baseman, but where else do you put him? Because you got to keep him in. I don't think they're going to trade him because I think they're already dealing with some kind of backlash on that. And India is playing well in his own right offensively. So I don't think they'll part with India, but they do have to figure out where all these pieces fit eventually. And they've got more coming up in the future next year, like Marte, like Cam Collier, some others too.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have if you're a Reds fan. Like, it's great. And, you know, it's another city that I felt bad, like, seeing what's happened there with the Reds. Like, I hope mm-hmm. they're competitive again. And I hope they find the pitching, but it's really more, I hope Nick Lodolo is healthy and Hunter Green finds consistency, because they already have some of the pieces, unlike some teams where you're like, gee, where are they going to find the pitching? I think the Reds have it. It's just a matter of unlocking that potential.
Yeah, and I hope Andrew Abbott's for real. Take their time calling him up, because, you know, I think there is a, you know, there, you know, you can, I've seen a lot of pitchers initially dominate when they hit AAA, and then they kind of hit a little bit of a lull. I want them to power through that lull a little bit there too. I do love seeing all this talent. It's fun to see all this talent, especially after how bitter I felt going into last season, right after the lockout, when they peeled off all these players. To see it, the turnarounds happen so quickly, is kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, wish you luck. I'm a long-suffering Mets fan, so I know in the lean years, you just kind of get bitter and grit your teeth, but it's hard to go away. You know, it's hard to stop rooting for your team.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about your Mets. Big series right now with the Phillies. They won again last night. Carrasco pitched well. He's pitched well his last two times out. Not dominant necessarily, but, you know, he hasn't been getting hit hard either. He's, you know, he's at least average starting pitcher, which is something they struggled to get for a while.
Yeah, that's really all they need from him at this point, especially with Max and Verlander in the fold. They just need him to be kind of and you know, even Kodai Senga, if he's as good as he's been, like, you know, two of his last three starts against the Rays and the Phillies, they just need him to be like a solid four, go out there, give him five or six, you know, decent innings. And if he can do that, I think he'll be okay. My concern with Carrasco, I think, now is just the age, like the durability. You know, has a lot of miles on him. He's been hurt over the years, but he's just reaching that age where it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, got hurt or had to, like, you know, just sit a couple starts. So the ceiling with him kind of is what it is.
For sure. Absolutely. So, and just they're trying to work in their young players and figure out where all their pieces fit. You know, Vientos only plays against lefties for the most part, and he doesn't play a position. So I've been finding it difficult to roster him. I have him in the RotoWire staff keeper league, and I haven't activated him because he's just not playing enough.
Yeah, the problem with Vientos, and there's the eligibility problem too in most leagues where he still is a UT or DH only, but the Mets have a roster problem in that they have two DHs essentially. So on some teams, if you didn't have that, it's like, okay, well, we don't have a DH. We'll just play him there a lot. They have Dan Vogelbach, and I know Vogelbach's having a down year, but the issue more is that it just their roster has so much limited flexibility because they have both those guys. And you're right, Vientos really can't play third, and Brett Beatty's there, so that's irrelevant anyway. And, you know, first base is blocked by a guy who, you know, is pretty good. So there just isn't a place for Vientos. As much as I like him as a hitter, we just haven't seen, I know he had a sac fly today, but we just haven't seen much from him. I think it's partially because when you're a young guy, we saw this with Francisco Alvarez at the very beginning. It's tough. People talk about this all the time. Like if you're a veteran and you've been around a long time, maybe you get used to being a sub. Some of those guys don't even do that. But for young players, that's a very hard thing to get acclimated to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Being on the wrong side of a platoon, especially like that, is really difficult there. We'll see how they figure things out, but I feel like they're on the cusp of going on a run. And meanwhile, the Braves are vulnerable. So, it could be a very interesting race, kind of a reverse of previous years where the Braves kind of made up the stagger. This year might be the Mets making up the stagger on them.
Yeah. Although I still think Atlanta is the favorite until I see otherwise. Like they're sure. Another team that, even though they're stumbling now, that it's not difficult to see them putting it, you know, all together.
Yeah. They just got to get one. They need one more pitcher, I think. One more starting pitcher. I think that, you know, going with three reliable starters is tough. If they can get Schuster a little bit better, or Soroka looks a little bit better, then I think they're in really good shape. So we'll see about that one there. Let's continue with our diamonds or cubic zirconia list on hitters. Nolan Gorman, pick 399 in terms of ADP. In other words, rare, you know, not often drafted in the main event. So far, he's, according to the RotoWire's earned auction value, Del Artule, he's worth $24 in a 15-team 5x5 league, 13 homers, 41 RBI, 4 stolen bases, 22 runs, and now he's hitting 272. Are you buying into his renaissance?
Yes, I definitely am. So Nolan Gorman, Robert Orr, who I mentioned before, had a great piece on him at Baseball Prospectus last month. And what he talked about was Gorman's struggle with the high fastball. So he just couldn't catch up to it. And it's something that, you know, it's not limited to Gorman. A lot of hitters have trouble with that pitch. And he's swinging less at those pitches this year. But what he's really done is he's made a swing adjustment and a stance adjustment where he's in less of a crouch. And, you know, if you go find the article, you know, that Robert Orr wrote, you know, his hands are higher. So he's getting to the ball more quickly. And when he connects, he's generating more power. Yes, the pitchers will adjust. They always do. But the bust he was last year is gone. Like, Gorman's legit. He'll have some average struggles here and there and go through some streaks. But the power is real.
Yeah, I think so, too. Common thread here is, too, like, they made their debuts last year. They struggled a little bit. And in year two, they're a little bit of, it's not quite post-hype, but it is a little bit of post-hype. I think with Gorman, it is. The NFBC is rolling out second chance drafts. Basically, I think the stats start accumulating next Monday. And Young went at a pick 100, Gorman at pick 94. So that's only four leagues so far, but, you know, at least in these cases, the drafters think they're for real.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a little aggressive. And, you know, I think I heard you talking about this with Fred Zinke in that podcast. Fred was talking about, like, kind of the recency bias. And actually, I'm sorry, it wasn't you and Fred. It was, this is where I get my podcast picked up. It was Eno Saris and Derek Van Riper on the Athletic podcast.
Okay.
But they were talking about the same concept. They were talking about, you know, we have recency bias. You know, we really can't help ourselves. However, with Gorman in particular, maybe that's a little overvalued. I don't think it's particularly crazy. Like, we talked about coming into the season, how second base was kind of thin at the top and kind of thick at the bottom. There aren't many second basemen that Gorman at the moment, I'd say, is definitively worse than. Like, he probably is like a top 6-7 second baseman.
Yeah. And it speaks to the position too, right? It's really been a case where we haven't had too many solid second basemen. Jazz Chisholm obviously qualifies there, but isn't a full-time second baseman, and he's hurt. Would you rather draft Jazz Chisholm for what's left of the season or Nolan Gorman for what's left of the season?
I still think I'd rather have Jazz. I know there's some risk because he's coming back from an injury, but particularly in a roto format, those steals, and yeah, I know more people are running, but the potential for those steals makes it really difficult to pass up on him. I know there's some average risk, but it's not like Gorman's a high average guy either. So it's closer than it was before the season started, but I think I'd still rather have Jazz.
Yeah. This list of the second chance ADPs is fascinating to me. I'm just looking and sorting by second base. Semien's first, no surprise there. Well, actually, it is a slight surprise because there's the guy that now qualifies at second that's going after Semien, and that's Mookie Betts.
Yeah, you know, I have Betts on a team, and it's the same team with Young, and I forgot for a second he was, like, middle infield eligible. And, you know, I asked Brent, like, why is this other player on our bench? And he's like, oh, it's because we have Mookie Betts in middle infield now. I'm like, oh, yeah, that'll do it. Like, that definitely. Yeah, and Betts is funny because he's one of those players, I know the speed has dropped off with him, but every year he's just so, like, good and like, kind of top of the pops, and he's not quite a full five category guy because he's not running nearly as much, but he's still elite. So I could see a case for Betts over Semien, particularly because in a five outfielder league, having that flexibility to go back and forth with Betts between outfield and middle infield is big.
Indeed. It really is. It's huge. Especially, like, yeah, you get basically seven slots that you can do, eight if you count UT. So eight spots that you can use them in. That's huge. That's massive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But so Semien, Betts, Altuve's third. Nico Horner is the fourth second baseman on average drafted here. Ozzie Albies, who hit his 11th homer yesterday, is fifth. And then Jazz and then Gorman. So a meteoric rise for Gorman at the second base spot.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not even looking at the second chance ADP. I just kind of made an educated guess that Gorman was sixth or seventh. And that sounds like, you know, it's where he is about.
All right. Yeah. This guy is definitely a post-type sleeper. Josh Lowe, drafted at 386 on average. Man, what a great year he's having so far. I know Vlad Sedler, our good friend, was on Josh Lowe. Not too many others were. 304, 11 homers, 13 stolen bases, 37 RBI and 28 runs. You might lose a little bit in like runs and RBI because of the raise factor and platooning, but he's been so good that you can't even platoon him right now.
Yeah, so the thing about Lowe is I was in on him last year, and I have to admit I was mostly out. I did get him in an AL only. It was almost a bodies thing as opposed to really wanting Josh Lowe. But it is a classic case where the Rays are maximizing his ability by starting him like much more against righties. I know he's played a little bit against lefties, and it's working. And it's a weird profile because the strikeouts have dropped, but he's still swinging a lot. He's swinging a lot more than he did last year. So I feel like it's a case where he's exhibiting less patience, but the bat to ball ability of his is shining through as a result. Like sometimes we see that with players where they're too passive. They've got the bat on their shoulder and then they fall behind in the count. I think Lowe is just being more aggressive and the talent there is helping him. The power I think is going to regress. He's actually not hitting the ball as that much harder than he was last year, but he's going to run. The other note about him is he kind of falls into that raised bucket where he doesn't hit quite as well at the drop. His OPS there is under 800. In a 15 teamer, I don't think that really matters. And in a 12 teamer shallower, it's just something to keep in mind if you're playing lineups.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to be able to use a guy in his home park. That's really tough to try to avoid that. And that's why, like, you know, Rockies pitchers, obviously Coors always wins. But part of the thing is you can't even do like the road starts thing. I know Gene McCaffrey has always been big about finding home pitchers you can use in their home parks to begin with there. But it is a kind of a hidden factor there. Two other hitters real quick before we hit to some breakout pitchers, Yandy Diaz and Jorge Soler. Diaz at 262, Soler at 288. Soler, I mean, let's face it, the power has always been there. No surprise there. That home run in the World Series is still traveling. But still, nice to see him healthy and producing.
Yeah, so I think the pandemic did a number on all of us. I know it did on me because I forgot that the 48 home runs he hit was 4 years ago. It seems like it was much longer. And yeah, I know it was happy fun ball that year, but he's one of those players. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Carlos Quentin way back when Quentin, the rare times he was healthy. Oh, the home runs Soler hits are home runs anywhere. Like they're not cheapies. So as a result, you know, if he stays, the average is going to fall off. He's streaky. He should hit 35 to 40 homers. The rub with him, he's almost always hurt or he struggles. He had a back issues in April. I know we don't like back issues, and that's the thing that makes me nervous about Soler. I hope he doesn't, you know, go into a streak or struggle and suddenly the back is ailing and, you know, it goes from being out a week to being out a month. That's probably my big concern with him. He's a power hitter, so back issues with a power hitter really kind of make me wary. The one note, too, about him, he has an opt-out in his contract. I'm pretty sure if he is healthy the rest of the way or most of the way, he's going to use it.
Yeah, so that might encourage the Marlins to make a trade if it gets to that. Although the Marlins are taking advantage of the slow start by the Phillies. They're still, you know, in contention for a playoff spot, maybe less inclined to make any sort of trade. Although they just got smoked by the Padres today, 10-1. That's the thing about the Marlins. They either lose by 8 or they win by 1.
Yeah. Their run differential isn't very good, but yeah, I think coming into today, they, you know, if the playoffs ended today, I know it's silly, it's June 1st, but they were in one of the wild card positions.
Yeah. Exactly. Joe Musgrove finally had a good start. And the last two starts actually have been pretty good. 1.45 ERA in his last two starts. So maybe some signs of things turning around for the Padres. They started today 25-30, same as the Phillies.
Yeah. I mean, I always laugh because they had the bad mojo or the Padres did of doing the crying Jordan on Clayton Kershaw after they beat him a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago. And, you know, since then they were terrible. I know one doesn't really have anything to do with the other, but I found that kind of funny.
Yeah, absolutely. Instant karma. Yeah. Dodgers fans love to see that. That was for sure. Catch a lot of that out here. Before we move over to the pitchers, quick note from our friends at Rival Fantasy. A new MLB season means it's time for a new kind of daily fantasy baseball. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played, and they brought new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. Rival Fantasy games include Fantasy Bingo, Head-to-Head Player Challenges, and Fantasy Book, where users can select over-unders for 2 to 5 players. With games like this, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup and use code RotoWireMLB at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival, protected up to $50. Now's the time to step up to the plate and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena. All right, Jeff Erickson here with Mike Gianella from Baseball Prospectus. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Gianella. And it is right. Yeah, it is. Okay, I just want to make sure. Sometimes I say that and then I look again. It's like, oh, he has a different handle. But no, it is at Mike Gianella. And of course, check him out at Baseball Prospectus. We're looking at players that are breakout guys post 200. Are they for real? What sort of value can we place on them compared to their peers? Mitch Keller. Incredible season so far. But he was drafted at pick 273 in the main event. Man, you're loving what you got out of him, especially in terms of strikeouts.
Yeah, I'm a little sad because I think with the exception of one of these pitchers on your rundown, I don't have them anywhere. But yeah, so the strikeouts are really what jumped out with him. So he's throwing three different types of fastballs, at least according to, you know, the numbers that are out there. And it's the cutter he's added that really seems to have made a difference. Now, Baseball Prospectus, we have our own like ERA estimator. It's called DRA, which is deserved run average. It's a little bit higher than the other, like, you know, the expected ERA to see, but it's still a 3.43, which is really good. And the other thing about Keller, you know, even if the ERA jumps, I think the strikeout jump holds. So he's a definite, you know, ADP jumper in those second chance drafts and somebody who I think most of this is real.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I worry about like the team context. Pirates had a really bad month of May, although they finished with a decent road trip. But that might be tricky. But yeah, Keller's really skyrocketed in the ADP. He's at 84 overall. He's pitcher 41, but that includes relievers and starters. He's in the same territory as like Bryce Miller, Pablo Lopez, Hunter Green, Joe Musgrove, who got a good start today, and ahead of Shane Bieber, who got smacked around pretty good yesterday, and overall his strikeouts are down.
So wait, that sounds like pitchers are going a lot higher. Like, and I know they always go high at NFBC, but it sounds like they're going even higher than they did at the beginning of the season, at least in the non-main event leagues.
I think you're right, and I think the reason for that is that so many pitchers have gone bad. The milk's gone bad on them, so it's taken away guys that we normally would have included in that and felt like, okay, there's just not enough guys out there I can get, right? Alek Manoah, I can't use him anymore. Lance Lynn, can't use him anymore. Spent way too much bandwidth talking about those two jokers.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I have both of them in my longstanding like local league, and they've killed me.
Yeah, Manoah in particular, I have in too many places. Lance Lynn, I traded him in AL Tout Wars this week to Larry Schechter. So, and he actually initiated the conversation. I wasn't even peddling him, but so I've got that at least going for me that I got Akil Badu. But the fact is, I settled for Akil Badu because he's playing like the next 2 weeks against a bunch of righties. So I'm excited about just getting some playing time. I mean, that's where I am with Lance Lynn.
How are you doing there? Are you like, where are you overall?
There's only 12 teams, so I can't be 13th.
Okay. Well, I mean, so when you're in that position, like Frank Stanfill in labor was at the bottom, and I'm not calling out Frank, he's actually of CBS Sports. He's a good guy, but he made a trade where, you know, he got Matt Mervis like right as Matt Mervis was getting called up. And I think some people from the outside might've thought he gave up too much, but sometimes when you're in that position, you just have to kind of, you know, make those like deep bombs and hope they get caught. You know, usually the Hail Mary is an incomplete pass, but there's no glory in finishing 12. So you just have to kind of take those risks. So
yeah,
just something I think from the outside might not make sense, but you know, all politics are local, as you like to say.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is too, and Frank's a 2-time defending champ of the Tout Wars head to head league. So obviously he knows
what he's doing.
Yeah. When you get in a tough spot, you got to figure out, okay, is this, do I wait? Do I wait for these guys to come around, or is it time for more drastic measures? And I think you always have to make that decision. And in that case, it sounded like he needed to do more of a drastic measure. I kind of made one too. And I actually had gotten 3 good starts in a row out of Lynn. So I was kind of happy it was like selling a boat. I was happy to get it off my hands. And the timing worked out well.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've been in a position with pitchers like, yeah, I get it. They're probably get better, but like if I don't get something for them, and like you said, the milk goes completely bad and I've just got to throw it out, then I got nothing. And I know it's psychological, but we've all done it.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes you're wrong about that too. But, you know, I was talking with Rick and Glenn on their show on Sirius XM. They had me on the other day. And one of the things that came up is like, you know, when do you make that decision? Like, I cut Jake McCarthy in the NFBC when he got sent down, like a week after he got sent down. I just couldn't wait. They picked him up this past week. And, you know, it's a mistake maybe I made, but you can't be afraid to make mistakes either. You know, you've got to keep, you know, sometimes it there's the opportunity cost of getting a good starter otherwise, or getting a good player that you just, because I was holding on to this other play. Well, you can't lose by inaction either.
Well, that's the other thing about NFBC. And like when I started playing like an issue with TGFBI, I kind of learned that the hard way. Like you can't sit on two or three players on reserve for very long. Like it just has
there's
so much opportunity cost. Like you wind up putting a bad starting pitcher into your lineup. You wind up putting a platoon hitter or a Rocky on the road or whatever it is. You need a bench. And, you know, yes, you can hold on to one player and there are some no brainers. I completely see why you dropped McCarthy. Like it just didn't really make sense in that format to hold on to him.
Yeah. And the thing is, you'll make mistakes and your competitors will make mistakes too. But if you know, sometimes that action is better than, you know, I think usually on average, you're doing better by acting than by remaining static there. So that's the way it's always worked out for me in the past.
Yeah. I used to like, so, you know, being like a tout person and like a deep league person with unlimited reserves, I used to hate those rules. Like, no IL and a limited bench. I really like it now. Like I find it challenging. Like I like the idea, like you said, that everybody's going to make mistakes. And it's just one of those things where you have to kind of decide like, okay, if I drop this guy and someone picks him up, like, can I live with it? Like it's kind of fun.
Yep. It is. And I like that I have different types of leagues too. All these things I like. Let's continue with our diamond or cubic zirconia list. Tyler Wells mentioned in the chat as well. He was barely even drafted. Pick 481 on average. You've gotten quite a run out of Tyler Wells so far. If you've rostered him, maybe if you even picked him up, 61 Ks in 63 innings, which is well above his K rate from the past. 0.825 ERA. I mean, he does give up some hard contact from time to time. Of the pitchers on this list, I think his status is probably the shakiest. But what's your take on Tyler Wells?
Yeah, I you're probably right. There's one other name that might be close, but that's just because of the team context. In terms of the player, you're absolutely right. When you break down the numbers, he looks to me more like a home streamer than anything else, you know, thanks to the park. And, you know, in my notes, I said, don't tell Shane Bieber not to pile on him because, you know, Bieber got hit there anyway. But even so, it just feels like regression's coming. So Wells does generate a lot of weak contact. But even so, like all the batted ball data looks a lot like last year's batted ball data. Mm-hmm. I think he's more of a 4 ERA guy going forward. And I think more of a deep mix play. And anything shallower than that, like kind of a streamer, you know, you start him at home, you know, you move him in and out in a 10 or 12 team league, because I think he'll still be out there, should be out there on reserve. You know, the BABIPs with him, I know we look at BABIP less than we used to, but they're so low. Like it just seems like impossible that it's going to stay that way.
Yeah, I think so too. Speaking of Tout Wars and that team, I do have Tyler Wells, but I also had Grayson Rodriguez, unfortunately. Is Grayson Rodriguez a cut now that he's been sent back down?
I mean, and anything but only yes. Like Tout is only, so I think you kind of have to hang on to him there. I don't know who else you'd pick up. Maybe you know something I don't about your league. But even in a 15 team mix, I think at this point you have to drop him. He could be back in two or three starts, but there's still no guarantee that he's going to be good. Like we just don't know, and that's a tough thing with rookie pitchers. I think eventually he'll be good. Like there's too much talent there. And a lot of his struggles, like something else I picked up today from listening to Derek and Van Riper and Eno, is, you know, he's kind of throwing the cutter at inopportune times and he's got to kind of work on that. But I don't want him working on that while he's on my team. I think I'll just, you know, cut my losses and go after him next year.
That sounds about right. You see that a lot of times. A guy gets sent down, figures that out in the bigs eventually. But yeah. Post-type sleepers work for pitchers as well as hitters too. So I think that's the route to take as well. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I think it's even tougher with pitchers than hitters just because, you know, a hitter, you know, goes over 20 and it hurts. But if a pitcher puts up like a 7 ERA with a bad whip, it just can destroy your team.
Indeed. Indeed it can. Marcus Stroman on Memorial Day pitched a one-hit complete game shutout. The one hit wasn't even that hard of contact. Wander Franco had a little flare out to left field. Stroman's pitching very well. He was picked 250, so it wasn't like he was completely out of the blue, but he's definitely overachieved even that, though, still. And, you know, he's interesting because he could be a free agent at the end of the year. Says he doesn't want to get traded by the Cubs, but a trade could still happen.
Yeah, it could. So the thing with him, part of the key to success is his slider has historically been his best pitch. And I mean, I mentioned Mikey Ahedo of BP before, who wrote about this last year. You know, he said, hey, Marcus, you should throw your slider more. Well, he's doing that. I don't know if Marcus reads, you know, my guess right, but that's helped him. And the other thing, if you look at the heat maps, like he is throwing the ball lower, or he's, I don't know if he's generating more sink, or he's just, you know, starting with a lower release point. But last year in the heat maps, there was more in the middle of the zone. This year, there's a little bit like kind of middle low, but it's almost all low. That's why he's keeping the ball on the ground. It's always a fine line. I don't overstate this, but you know, I could see him with a mid three, and he's still going to have a low K rate. So that's always like kind of something to watch with Stroman. I don't know what the Cubs are going to do. Like, it's really weird because I know Stroman's mate has said he wants to come back, and he seems like a player that they should sign. Like, we know they have the money. We know despite the results this year, they want to compete, but yeah, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I actually expected better things from them this year too. I thought they'd be, you know, quietly, I thought they'd be better than the Brewers. I thought the Cardinals, but I also thought the Cardinals would run away with the division, and that obviously isn't happening either. So I've just been wrong about the division a lot, I guess, but yeah, I think, and it seems like Stroman has felt very comfortable there, and you can't have, I think that's kind of an important thing sometimes too, you know, being able, you know, we see like what he's doing with his pitches, but being able to like help be able to figure that out in Chicago has seemingly worked for him. So that's another thing. I'm kind of like, you don't want to necessarily see him change that venue because it might not be better elsewhere.
Yeah. We've seen that with pitchers who get traded at the deadline. Like sometimes it works. And then sometimes, you know, new pitching coach, new catcher, and you know, all of a sudden, and I think more so for someone who isn't a high velocity pitcher, that's where it goes sideways. Like if somebody's throwing like 96, 97 and they move, it's like, okay, well, yeah, they have to get rid, you know, used to a new catcher, but it's not the same as if you're throwing like 92, 93, you know, you're working right with movement, you know, you need a good framer, and yeah, then it can be difficult.
Yeah, I think so too. If you think you should be selling high on Stroman, what can you ask for?
You mean for fantasy or the Cubs?
Well, let's start fantasy. And then maybe we can look at the Cubs too.
Well, fantasy, I would probably try to look for somebody maybe like outside the top 100, but maybe not too far for a hitter, you know, just see if somebody looks at that ERA, looks at the results. What's a little bit tough about the sell high is that the strikeouts are low. Somebody might come back and say, hey, I get it, he's performing well, but I'd rather get a pitcher with, you know, with closer to a strikeout an inning or even better than that if I'm going to trade for a pitcher. But it doesn't hurt to start there, right? Because really, right, you always ask if somebody shoots you down, you can say, well, you know what? I tried.
Yeah. It's funny is, and probably this is because he doesn't get a ton of strikeouts. Stroman is on average going at like pick 174 in the second chance draft. So not too far from his main event ADP, at least in comparison to the other risers that we've seen. You know, he's definitely earlier, but not like considerably so.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is roster construction. Like, I feel that for your first three starters, you do want to try to get those strikeouts and, you know, have that locked in. You know, it's funny on my talent team. I mean, it's not ha-ha funny, but I got Justin Verlander, Max Fried, and Robbie Ray. Those are my front three in Tout Wars. And the pitching's done okay because I have Stroman and Chris Bassett. They were my next two pitchers. But strikeouts are where I'm struggling, and that's why, because I was trying to get those strikeouts on the front end, and you know, it didn't really work out.
And they're still in third place, so pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, the problem there is you know, Mullins is hurt now. Cedric Mullins is hurt for me too, so I'm struggling in steals and strikeouts. And you know, as you pointed out, I didn't do it deliberately like Doug Dennis did. It's difficult to play an A category game, you know, even if you fall into it like I did by mistake.
Absolutely. Because you're not dominating, you know, you're doing well in the hitting, but you're not dominating it. So yeah, that's right, the tricky part there. Absolutely. Okay. Got another pitcher on our list. And that is, guy that was undrafted. Now, nary a single NFBC main event draft was he taken. That's Bryce Elder for the Braves. And Elder, I mean, he was not the highest touted young guy. I mean, Schuster was touted higher. Dylan Dodds was touted higher. Elder, all he's done so far in 11 starts is post a 1.92 ERA, a 1.157 WHIP, and 56 Ks in 65 innings. Only three wins to show for all that, but keep in mind he wasn't on the big league roster to start the season.
So of all the names that you gave me, this is the one I know he's doing well, but I don't trust it at all. Like I'm just really feel skeptical. If I had him, I certainly would, you know, obviously hang on to him and not just give him away in trade. But if someone came to me wanting to trade by Bryce Elder, I'd probably be like, yeah, you should go to somebody else. Like, you're not going to get what you're looking for. He is generating a lot of ground balls, and he's kind of a death by slider pitcher where he's just throwing a ton of sliders. But the weird thing is the hard hit data is still really high and even higher than it was last year. And then the other thing, too, is – you know, I don't think it's definite, but if he struggles at all, you know, you just mentioned it, Atlanta has some other options and they're competing. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if Elder has, you know, a couple bad starts or goes on a bad run, if there's a quick hook for him. So those are my concerns. Like, I get it. He's done really well, but if you can't sell high on him, I would do it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it might be harder to do, like you said, because the name value wasn't there in the first place. You're not even a veteran, so it's not even like Stroman where you have a little name recognition. But, you know, funny thing is Bryce Elder has been involved in a ton of trades. I pulled up the Yahoo page, and they have a good, you know, trades involving this player that have been made. And there's some interesting ones there. And I don't know about how the contract situation's worked out, but, you know, there's 25 trades involving Bryce Elder so far today alone. Spencer Steer, guy we talked about earlier, is one of them in a straight up trade. David Robertson's been dealt straight up. Francisco Lindor, that's crazy right there. I mean, that, you know, I know he's been struggling, but come on, you know, that to me is wild to see that sort of return. Now, I don't know if there's some salaries involved in that in the keeper format or something, but that, man, that's just crazy.
I have to say that has to be a keeper thing because I can't imagine otherwise. Yeah, Lindor's struggled. I mean, he's picked it up a little bit lately, although some of that was the core series. But yeah, I if you make that trade straight up in a redraft, you're a genius.
Yep. I saw a Bryce for Bryce rookie trade, Elder for Miller. You know, I'd rather have Miller than Elder, even though Miller just got crushed by the Yankees this week. But still, I think I'd take Bryce Miller over Bryce Elder.
Yeah, I think I would too. Although, yeah, Miller's got some regression coming, but the difference there is I believe a lot more in Miller.
Yeah, I'm in the same way. I mean, the Braves really need Elder. They're in a position where if he fails, I mean, then they're really reliant on making some sort of deal because Soroka might be a little shaky. Schuster had one strikeout against the A's yesterday, did get the win, but he was dodging raindrops the whole start. They're really, and even Charlie Morton as your number two is a little shaky.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Like, it is easy for me to say that he's going to regress or they'll pull him, but you're absolutely right. Like, unless they, you know, find another way or unless, you know, he just got promoted, AJ, you know, Smith-Shawver winds up in the rotation, which is not a certainty. Like, we've seen the Spencer Strider comparisons, but
yeah,
I don't think you can say he's going to be the next Spencer Strider. Like, there's only one, you know, pitcher like that.
Exactly. And I think I might have even made the comparison a little bit just because the, you know, start him off in the bullpen and move him to the rotation. Yeah, it's the old Larry Durker, Whitey, you know, Earl Weaver sort of way of bringing pitchers along. But it just because they're doing that doesn't make them the same.
Yeah, the Rays did it with David Price like way back when, I remember, but you're right. Like, it's not always a successful formula, and some pitchers like really struggle with that. Like, they don't like being in the bullpen after spending all their time in the minors in the rotation.
Right, exactly. So, good luck. And, you know, I guess there is a market out there for Bryce Elder. I just didn't think it was that robust. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe we're playing in different types of leagues, Mike, and viva la difference again.
Yeah, I mean, leagues like that are kind of fun when there's a lot of trading. Like, I get that we're all looking for an edge in the industry league, so we don't trade very much. But I do miss leagues like way back when where you just pick up the phone and, you know, and I say phone and make a deal with somebody within like half an hour.
Yeah, well, Ian Kahn still does that. He calls me all the time in XFL. if you haven't been on the other end of an Ian Khan phone call, but just play in one league with him and you will. It is a more efficient way of getting trades done. I like it. And plus you get to talk to somebody. It's you know, keeping in touch with your friends.
Yeah, there's a couple of people I still do that with in my home league, and it is nice. It's a nice just to, you know, shoot the breeze for a few minutes. Even if you don't make a trade, it's just nice to shoot the breeze and talk baseball. That rehab game I went to with Stanton and Donaldson, that I went with a league mate, and, you know, we didn't even talk to him. Nice. It was just nice, you know, sitting there with him in the nice weather, you know, northeast weather for a couple hours, and in the, you know, as the sun was going down, and talking baseball.
Talking ball, catching up with the families, all that kind of good stuff. You know, my original league, yeah, it's like, we started when we were in college. Now our kids are going to college. It's kind of crazy. And so,
yeah, my league is, I mean, it's Billy Allman, named after the baseball player Brown graduate.
Because
it was originally Brown University. And I did not go to Brown, and I joined that league about 10 years in, like in the mid 90s. So that's how long I've been in it. That's how old I am. I was a young pup when I started. And yeah, like the people in there now, like, you know, their kids, they have little kids, their kids are grown, like they're out of the house. It's just wild, like, you know, watching people like grow up in those leagues over the years.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. You know, I love holding on to long traditions like that. Have a golf trip like that, you know, have this league, have a golf league that's over 20 years. It's pretty cool. I like it. So, hey, what do you got cooking up at BP next? What's your next feature coming up?
Well, I do a fab column every week. You know, I mentioned that it's actually a retrospective fab. So I cover TGFBI and what went on there, as well as a Tout Ale and Labor NL. Today I publish every Thursday, like kind of a freelance column. Today I was looking at like small samples in April versus small samples in May. Like, why do we pay attention more to the April samples over the May samples? I haven't decided what we're going to write about next week, but I was thinking about writing about two start pitchers, you know, kind of when they're good, when they're bad. I know the conventional wisdom is kind of almost always to go with a two start arm. I've been skeptical of that over the years. I just need to pull together some research to kind of really dig into it if I do decide to go that route. And then we have our podcast, Flags Fly Forever. It was on hiatus last year, but we're back. That's me, John Hagland, who is also a good player in his own right. He won TGFBI the first year. It was at the Champions League. I think he was in Tout for a couple of years. And then our producer, Samuel Hale, who's a radio guy from Texas. So we have that going. We're actually recording tonight. We went once a week in the preseason. We're kind of doing every 2 weeks or so during the season.
Awesome. So Flags Fly Forever. Make sure to check that out. Download it, get it, or flat, and you know, mark it too, so you can get a notification when it comes up there. We'll hit up a couple of questions before we go. Heart Foundation says, need some help with Mullins going down and or starting pitching help with Steele going down. Should I go with Ha-Sung Kim or Jack Sawinski or Leody Taveras, Siri, and then for, you know, Bailey Ober for Steele? Let's talk about the hitting guys there. Ha-Sung Kim, Jack Sawinski, Leody Taveras, or Jose Siri. Who do you like best among that group?
Well, I mean, some of that depends on what you need in terms of steals or power, but I think I like Sawinski. Like, I get that he's streaky, but he offers a little bit of both. It sounds like that's a deep enough situation where you're not really worried about the lineup. You're just more worried about overall production. So I think I'd take my chance with Sawinski, hope you get into another hot streak. And, you know, if you don't, then looking at those other names, it sounds like you might be able to find somebody else on the wire.
Yeah, I agree. Saw some people chatting up Ben Lively. You know, had a gem against the Red Sox, and he's been pitching well since calling up. Shut out the Mets in his first call up. Triple A numbers are actually pretty good. He pitched in Korea for a while after being kind of a 4A pitcher before that. Are you buying his renaissance?
I mean, probably not. He's still probably a streamer, but I will say, like, from the limited amount I've seen, he looks better. He was a Phillies prospect, and something with the Phillies is his fastball just wasn't that good, and that kind of was his problem. It looks like he's, and you've seen him more than I have, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like he's working more off his off-speed stuff and less off the fastball, and it's working. I don't know how long it'll work, but it could be a situation where in the short term, he's okay because major league hitters haven't seen him because he's been in Korea, and you kind of ride the wave until it doesn't work, which at some point it probably won't.
Yeah. I think there's a continuing trend though of pitchers that do better when they throw their fastball less. It seems like that's one of those ongoing things. Even with like Bobby Miller in his debut, first inning, he threw a lot of fastballs and everyone's like, "Ooh, throws 97, 98, whatever, or 100 even." And then it's like, well, I did better once they stopped calling fastballs. Yeah. So go figure.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a sequencing thing. And you're right. Like whenever I look at the graphs, you know, or fan graphs, that's what you see. You see pitchers, a lot of pitchers, you know, it's not all the way down, but it's down like 5-10% on the fastball and then, you know, 5-10% up on everything else.
Indeed. Indeed. Right. And you're right. It's sequencing. It's trying to get mapping. You know, it's trying to get the tunneling right so people think it's the same pitch and all that. So there you go. I think that'll cover it. Make sure to hit up Mike Gianella on Twitter at Mike Gianella. Hit myself up on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson. Of course, check out both Baseball Prospectus and RotoWire. You can check out RotoWire for the RotoWire free trial at rotowire.com/pod. Mike, awesome talking with you today. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I hope to have you on our podcast sometime. I don't think we've ever had you on, so we owe you a guest spot.
I'd love to do it. And that's Flags Fly Forever. Make sure to check that out where you find your podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Two-Star Starters coming up tomorrow with Todd and Clay. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Take care.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.